Hey guys, welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
And we have a fun episode for you guys today.
I'm excited for this.
Yeah, we've got Zach from Bring a Trailer coming on. And the reason that we're having Bring a Trailer on is they're awesome. First of all, they're a partner of
ours.
We want to try and talk to them as much as possible. But also, we have a car to sell.
That's right. We do.
And
yes.
Reluctantly, you and Jeff are making me sell this car.
Oh, you don't even want to sell it?
What would you do with this thing?
Another Mercedes?
I think this car should stay around for the scholarship car next year.
No. Do you know how many people were like, oh, I bet it's an old Mercedes? And I was like, do you really think I would let that slide?
Yes. Yeah, I saw that. Nobody wants that, apparently. I don't know.
Nobody wants that. No, of course not. The stereotype that I'm saying is true.
What stereotype is that?
It's an old, boring grandpa car.
Oh, it just did so well, man. It was indestructible on scouting the rally. It was
absolutely a monster. Yes.
And I destroyed my back. My back is finally feeling a little bit better. Yeah, it's finally getting there.
That's good. Yeah, no.
I think it was the 8 to 10 hours a day in the car that did it. I think 8 to 10 hours a day on any car probably would have been an issue.
Yeah, even like sitting in a lazy boy for 10 hours, you're going to have a back that hurts. Like, it doesn't matter.
I wonder if anybody has put, they had to, if someone has to have put a lazy boy in a car.
Oh, I'm sure they have. Well, right? Have you seen any Mercedes, like a Cadillac from like the early 80s?
It
is a sofa, right?
That's a good point.
That is a lady
the lever on the side of the sofa.
A lady boy? Oh, I said lady boy. Lazy boy. Totally
different.
Put
a lady boy in your car.
Totally different.
I'm not putting any. And yeah, well, it's you're going to have trouble living that one down. I sense stickers and coming. So I'm thinking of like, what would the lever do that makes the legs
the feet
flip
go up?
Like, what would you, would that
be an
e-brake?
Better not be the e-brake. I wonder if anyone has ever, like, been old and confused it, right? Because you're so comfy, you think you're in your lazy boy.
What, you're pulling out of the chair and you pull the lever?
Yep. Oh, that's bad news bears.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
We have Bring a Trailer. Who specifically do we have from Bring a Trailer, Chris?
Zach Beatty. He's one of the OGs. He's been there for, like, 8 years. He's the director of auction operations and the customer experience. So we'll have to find out exactly what that means.
Here's what I'm really excited about with this whole thing is, yes, we have this car to sell on Bring a Trailer.
Yep.
And I'm trying to think, I've submitted a couple cars to be auctioned off, but I never ended up selling them there, right? And I think there's many, many people, the majority of people, have not sold a car on Bring a Trailer. They've followed it or they've seen cars be sold. What I think is going to be really cool is getting this kind of inside perspective of what it's like to sell a car and what the process is like on Bring a Trailer. And of course, we can hear from the man himself, Zach, but it's going to be cool because I think we're going to document
this
process
of questions
a little bit.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, I want to help. Everybody's always, I think selling something on some of these auction websites, if you haven't done it, is a little bit of an enigma. Like, what do I do?
It's also a little intimidating, right?
Where do the pictures go? And like,
yeah,
I honestly have, a little bit of fear because these cars are well loved, you know, and there's a lot of people that love these old Mercedes, and there's a lot of nerds. Okay, it's not as bad as selling an old Audi. Audi nerds are the worst nerds, I think.
As far as picking it apart,
in terms of just being like, well, that's not the correct year for sure.
Yeah,
Audi dudes are like. Maybe I'm just basing that off the Glacier Lakes Quattro Club, which is our Audi club up here.
Just the hyper nerds.
It's like if PCA wore a monocle, you know, it's just like,
it's worse.
It's worse.
Oh man.
Yeah. Dude, did I ever tell you about the first time I went to a PCA meeting?
No.
So
say next, I'm not going to be surprised by.
So I joined PCA cause I was doing a lot of photography for PCA back in the day and writing articles and different things.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to get the magazine. In order to get the magazine, you have to sign up.
You have to be a member.
You have to be a member. So that's the con, right? That's if you want the magazine.
Well,
which is about...
yes. And if you want the local magazine, you have to sign up for PCA and then
chapter.
For the local chapter, right?
Right. Right. And I said, why
which,
not?
Which, do you, I just, honestly, I hate to even say it. I just did that because I had been a PCA member once years ago. And I just did it because we went to the local PCA show. And their like photographer dude was like, "Oh, Rhett's gonna be on the cover this next month."
Great, nice. And you want to get it? It's So not all PCA chapters are created equal, right? Ours,
sure.
Honestly, kind of sucks. There's a good little motorsport aspect to it, but I
don't.
The
problem is it's all a lot of older generation at this point. I don't think it sucks.
I don't have
because
a problem.
Guess what, Chris?
Yes.
A lot of people, including a lot of members of the board, listen to the podcast.
Oh, they do. Okay. Well,
yes, I was approached and said, like, love the podcast.
Here's the deal.
So I don't think it sucks. I enjoyed it, but it is an older generation.
And I do have fear. Okay. So I've started to have this fear is that you spring up the older generation thing. We have to watch the clock because Zach will be here at, well, we'll just see whenever he pops in. Maybe we can just bring him in. I don't want to go on too much.
Because we are becoming the older generation.
I'm scared of it. So when I think of older generation in cars, the most quintessential thing I think of is Back to the 50s.
100%. Okay. Yes.
I think of the dudes dragging around oxygen tanks. Like
for real. Frequently.
And I see like the timeout dolls that are leaning on the cars.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's a little
I do not understand it. We've talked about it before.
Yep.
It's the creepy doll that, yeah, I do not understand.
And they love that shit. Like a lot of the older dudes, they love that stuff. They love their Boyd Coddington style stuff. And
oh yeah,
and I've always kind of looked at that like, oh man, look at those old dudes with their old stuff doing old things.
But guess what?
And then I go,
it's just generational.
And I go, wait, what am I doing?
Yep.
That's going to be that. Like, what is 100%. It that I do?
There so is going to be like, something.
I don't know. What is it?
Analyzing?
Like,
what
is it? What is my timeout kid on my bumper? What is yours? Yours is your stupid license plates or your pet boys roof racks and stuff like that, I think. What?
Pet boys roof racks. Okay.
Yeah, with your little lights that look like they belong on a Ford Raptor that just visits Walmart every day.
Uh-huh.
I'm not commenting
because most of those items are from sponsors. So
well, here's the deal. It looks your Cayenne
has great taste for
has
any
too
modified
many
off-road.
Things. It's yeah, too many
I've taken,
things.
I've taken things off. I'll have to
okay. Because it had too many things. Like
yep,
each individual item on your Cayenne.
Back to like no items on the roof rack.
Okay.
It's very clean. I get more comments driving that car than even the orange car. It's very frustrating, actually, to me.
Like, you look like your car, your Cayenne used to look like you went into the closet and got dressed blindfolded. There was just too much going on. Like, you just, like, this color shirt.
You know what that is?
Like,
it's Johnny Depp. I need another accessory before I can leave the house.
yeah, exactly that. I'm glad to hear that you
need
to
put on five more bracelets.
Yeah. So I walk into this PCA meeting, and I'm standing there, and I'm trying to, like, talk with people. And people were basically, well, first of all, everybody's wearing a sport coat, which I just bought a sport coat the other day. So maybe I'm getting old.
Yeah.
They're all sport coat wearing, like we're drinking wine and we're, you know,
well,
cheese.
They're professionals.
Anyway.
They probably just came from work, Chris. What?
These are executives.
These are well-off, successful people. You don't like them because of that.
It was not that. I tried to talk with people. I would talk with people, and they would talk about themselves a little bit, and then they would turn their back on me.
Okay.
And this happened 5 or 6 times until someone goes, hey, that's Chris that works for Panorama. And then all of a sudden, I was everybody's friend.
Yeah, that's what you didn't like is the dichotomy.
He's got an early 911. Oh,
yeah.
He's everybody's friend. I didn't like that.
You didn't like the dichotomy.
It was a huge, and from that night, I didn't go to another event. I've never been to one. I've gone to a couple of motorsports things to hang out with the 311 RS guys. They're always there doing things and making everybody else look slow. But
I like going to their spring car show every year because
that event needs some help. Anyway, okay. Let's
were there last year.
I wish, can we like, I don't know. It's
what?
I would like a better location. It's always just, it's
that
not,
park.
It's not fun to go to. It's like going to, being like, I'm going to go to a nice dinner and you go to TGI Fridays. You know, if I'm going to go out to dinner, which is fancy, are you? Yeah, exactly. If I'm going to go out to a dinner, which is, I'm equating dinner with car show.
Yeah,
I want to go to like a Michelin restaurant. Dude, I went to
Oh god. Okay.
I don't have I'm like borderline I'm car poor, house poor, whatever you want to call it, right?
Yes.
I've got nice things, but no money.
You're cash poor. Yes.
It's big time. Super cash poor.
Yes, so I know
make
that.
This, I make this appointment at this appointment. A reservation.
Call the reservation. Like, this is how Jesse, you know you don't go to fancy restaurants. Yes, I'd like to make an appointment.
to eat some of your food, please. I would like to eat some of your food. Can I make an appointment to eat it?
Yes, exactly.
And also drink something. Can I make an appointment for that as well? So and I want to do something nice for Jessie. And she likes... actually, what was interesting is one of my friends works for a company that has AI software that helps you find restaurants.
Okay.
And I typed in the phone number. You text it. I'm like, hey, I'm looking for a restaurant in Chicago that's Michelin rated, that has a swanky, dark vibe and good scotch. And it gave me like two options. And one of them was called Maple and Ash. So I pull up this website and I'm like, wow, this is awesome. This is all this stuff. Spot on. Yeah. This is, it's dark. It looks swanky. It's like, it's great. So we show up there. And of course, I mean,
did you make an appointment?
I made an appointment.
Good.
For 10:15, which is super late.
Ooh,
reservation.
That is a late.
It's a late reservation. I didn't care. Who cares? Who gives a shit? It's Friday night. So we walk into this place and they're like, reservation, please. And it's just like one guy standing down in like this hallway. Like you're like,
yes.
What? Like, and then there's like a little row restaurant thing with some booths and a bar.
Do you remember Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where they go to the fancy restaurant?
No.
You don't?
I don't remember.
Oh, it's great, because the three like high school kids walk in, and they're like, do you have a reservation? He's a French dude with the pencil mustache.
Yeah.
And he goes, actually, I'm Abe Froman. And he goes, you're Abe Froman? Because he looked at the sheet. The Chicago King, or the hot dog king of Chicago or something. And he's like, yes, I am. And then the girlfriend like calls him. Yeah.
No, there was none of that for me.
That was what I was picturing.
Jessie always
really? You have a reservation?
Jessie always looks pretty, so it doesn't really matter. She always, is,
you're just the guy behind.
Yeah, I just get dragged behind. So we go in there, of course, like all of the servers are handsome. All the girls are young, slim, attractive, mini skirts. There were more beautiful people. We go up this elevator. We go in, and it's like music's playing. It's dark. There's like little chandeliers. And it seems like a place where you would drink scotch or whatever, but it's packed. And so I sat down. Dude, the amount of beautiful women at this place. Oh my god, it was insane.
Are we talking the clientele or
the clientele? Waitresses? The clientele. Okay. The men and the women were all extremely.
Were they?
They looked
also
successful and
professional.
And there's no, yes, they were. Yeah, they were. They didn't have sport coats on, though. They didn't have sport coats on. And people talked to me. It was nice. I didn't have to tell them who I was to get them to talk to me.
There you go.
I sit down. I look at the menu, and I just go, oh, shit.
Like, you did, so you didn't pull up the menu.
I did, but I glanced, and I was like, oh, okay, this is fine. And I just went, fuck it. Right? So he brings out, like, this shaker of, he's like, oh, we got a martini ready for you. Like, without even asking for it. We got a martini, like, where he's shaking it. It's a pomegranate martini. He pours it out for my wife, and he's like, I'll be right back to take your order. Drink this pomegranate martini. Drink Jesse's pomegranate martini, because it was so fucking good. Now I'm wasted. Yeah. And like, I understand.
You don't drink normally.
No, I don't drink. So I'm wasted. They bring the menu. I think then they waited like 10 minutes for me to be wasted before they came and took my order.
Sure. Yeah.
Which seems like a great
business
plan.
And you're like, you know what? What do you recommend? What's
so
the best thing?
This I
you
get
the
like
Chris
this.
Kluel, like, what is the best thing? I want the craziest thing.
That's kind of what happened. So we like, you want any appetizers? So, I don't know. It took us like an hour to order, because we just didn't. Everything looked so. I mean, everything was desirable. So I had foods. One of the reasons why I'm telling you this is because I had foods that I don't normally eat.
Okay? Oh right, okay. So they did not have Kraft macaroni and cheese on the menu.
They didn't. But everything, I didn't add salt to anything. I don't think it needed.
Did you ask for Heinz ketchup at the fancy restaurant?
I did not.
Oh
did not.
No,
dude! I don't put ketchup on steak or anything. I don't. I'm not. I'm
you
not
strike
a degenerate
me as someone who would.
I'm not a degenerate. No A1 salt. No A1. No nothing. No Heinz 57. I don't do any of that type of thing. I just eat the steak as is. Anyway, steak is salt, has salt and butter and pepper on it anyway.
Yeah. No. No, it's well seasoned when it's done right. Yes.
So I go. I have raw Wagyu. Like so thinly sliced that you could see through it.
Actually raw?
Raw.
Like smoked?
No, just raw. just raw. And on it is king crab on the top.
Okay.
And on the king crab is caviar.
Okay.
And the plate is like 9 inches across, and it's $85 for this for this plate. And I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm getting that. We also got these noodle things that were called flowers of love or flowers of passion. Inside these noodles is like the really rare truffle mushroom things.
Okay.
That like like they find, like pigs go find them and shit.
Yeah,
like
truffle pigs. Yeah. Yeah.
They were I tried one of those, Jake. I don't eat mushrooms, but I tried it anyway. It's really good. It's fucking insane. Dude, everything I had was like some of the most. I'm so hungry right now. Anyway, so the guy comes back, I'm like, he's like, what do you want? I'm like, I haven't had Wagyu before. I'd like to try it. Bring me the best Wagyu that you have. I'm looking at the menu. It ranges anywhere from $90 to $185. I'm like, whichever one you think I should try, if I haven't had it, just bring it to me. And but I did that without pointing at the menu. He's gone. Jesse orders like a bone-in fillet or whatever. It's like $95. The people leave. The guy leaves. He comes back. By the way, the server was awesome. They also have this thing on the menu that says, I don't give a fuck, and it's $200. And then they just pick shit and bring it to you. It's kind of cool. It's like an I don't give a fuck.
I would do that. I would try that.
It was tempting. But I was looking at $200 being just for some reason that number was like, okay, this is getting
excessive.
Anyway, he comes back 5 minutes later. He's like, I just want to check. You said you wanted the best Wagyu we have, and it's $400. And I go, okay, maybe not. So then I end up getting this drunken Wagyu, which is it's cows that they feed like alcoholic mash to. Like they have a mash and they feed it to the cow. And I ended up having that. It was incredible. It's $185.
And then you got more drunk.
I had a couple of beers. I was wasted. I think the entire meal it's the most I've ever spent on a meal. And I don't necessarily regret it, but I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I just spent $500 on dinner.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous, but everything was amazing. I had a great time with Jesse. I tried all kinds of foods I'd never tried before. I had king crab.
Good for you. I am proud of you.
I had caviar, which has always scared the shit out of me. I don't want to eat fish eggs. It's fucking disgusting. That sounds... you know what it tasted like? Nothing. It didn't taste like much of anything at all. It was just kind of like...
it's actually very good. Then.
Really?
Yeah. Because you don't want it to taste too salty or too fishy.
No, it was kind of like an adornment.
It's generally for the... you want it for the texture. And
yeah. Well, the texture was fine. But, I mean, I could take it or leave it. I was like, this is whatever. I'm eating baby fish. That's kind of weird, but okay. Why is it that the more expensive food gets, it just gets weird? Like, oh,
because
you're eating fish
not
babies.
Common. It's rare. That's like with anything else. Why are the stupid cars they only made 15 of? Why are those the expensive ones?
I got
ones?
It. You got it. You got me. I'm with you. I'm with you.
You know what 100%. I do want to try, and I think you should too. So we should go to a nice sushi place. Because you've never had sushi, or maybe you just have and haven't liked it. But I want the puffer fish, where like if they cut it wrong, you're dead.
Yeah, I don't want to try.
100% would do that.
You have 100% children. Would do you can't, it. You have a child. You can't do that. That's no good.
I have life insurance. It's fine.
Probably not as much life insurance as your wife has, is my guess.
That is very true.
Yeah, it's the same
not
situation
worth nearly as much.
It's the same situation over here. All right. We have Zach coming on here in a minute. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to talk about Petrolbox.
Before we talk about Petrolbox, what do you think that Mercedes is going to sell for? Let's get you on the record right now. And ask me any questions you need to know, and I'll answer. I know everything, so I can answer them for you before you guess.
Okay, what do they on average go for?
So color is very dependent, because there's lots of bad colors. Mileage, somewhat dependent, but not.
How many miles does this one have?
255,000 miles. But it's not like, it's not the end of the world, as long as the car is maintained. It's a rare color, very rare color. Mm-hmm. It's all Euro. They sell anywhere from $6,000 to $15,000. If you have a wagon, they sell for a little bit more, but like six on the low end for like
So just to clarify for our listeners, this is Overcrest vehicle. Overcrest owns this and is selling this.
Yep.
So I'm gonna say that I had a number in mind that I would be ecstatic about, and that was 11,000.
11,000. Okay. That's what you want to get, but is that what you think it's gonna be?
I don't think it'll get there.
I'm thinking $8,500. Nine. Is where I'm thinking it'll go. We'll see what Zach says. Maybe Zach will have
some info for us.
All right. Tell us about Petrolbox. What do we got?
Well, Petrolbox does not cost that much. No. It is only $19.95. You can head over to my Petrolbox right now.
It doesn't cost that much, but it is the Wagyu A5 of boxes.
No. No, you know exactly what it is, Chris.
What is it?
It's the $200 I don't give an F option.
Oh, because guess what? You go.
You don't know what you're getting.
That's
but
true.
You know it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's true.
That.
Very true.
So mypetrolbox.com, head over there. It is a monthly subscription, of course. It makes a great gift. Every single month, they have awesome gear, including an enamel pin. They have stickers. They have generally apparel, whether that's maybe a hat or a t-shirt or a sweatshirt we've gotten before. You get detailing supplies, some type of cool tool or gadget. It's always really exciting, cool stuff to open. It's like Christmas morning every month. And it's just awesome stuff. And it's a great deal. $19.95 a month. Otherwise, the Petrobox Premium gets you even more gear for $39.95 a month. Use code OVERCREST at checkout, though, Chris.
Do it.
That'll get you $6 off. And it helps us, of course, as well.
All right. All right. Let's talk to Zach about this Mercedes and everything you need to know about selling a car and bringing it together. And I have a lot of questions that aren't about process. All right. We will talk to you guys in a minute. Zach. Dude, thanks so much for coming to hang out with us on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for letting me slack off in the middle of the day here. This is great.
Perfect. Perfect. You guys are both in air-conditioned goodness. I'm out here. It's 89 degrees outside sitting in my garage just like
that's your own fault. You want to look cool with the cars behind you and don't just set up a space in your house.
Let me look at my own camera here and see if I look cool. I do.
Yeah, no, you don't.
I do look cool.
Don't worry. You don't.
Zach, do I look cool?
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's only inflate his ego. Yeah.
Zach, I was looking at your Instagram. What do you drive? Because there's quite a variety there. And I was trying to see what your car taste was like.
Variety is a funny word. And also, you're probably the only person in the world looking at my Instagram based on the traffic there. But I guess I laugh at variety because I keep buying more or less the same experience over and over. So. The site I think has a ton of variety. My personal taste or what I like to own is usually more in the line of high revving, naturally aspirated and seemingly mid engine, occasionally rear engine cars.
So we're talking
what does that include?
Like an S2000 or a Honda?
That's not mid engine, Chris.
No, but NSX is.
Yeah, S2000, a little front mid in there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Behind the front axle all the way. I had an S2000 back in the day. Now it's hard to not just sound kind of obnoxious how spoiled I am. But yeah, I have an NSX. That car's a keeper for me. I've had it for 5 years, spent a few years looking for the just right spec.
First or second gen?
It's a late first gen. So it's a 2000, which gets the 3.2 and the 6-speed from what I would call the ugly fixed headlight cars. So that's very subjective. And 2000's an interesting year for, this is where your audience is totally tuning out, but it gets a ABS upgrade that the later cars got. It gets the perforated leather on the seats and the wheel, just looks a little cleaner.
So
you got the best of both worlds. Like you have all the upgrades you want, but still the pop-ups, right?
Yeah, I like to think so. Perfect. I mean, a coupe would probably be dream spec, but they made just so few and they're pretty pricey when they come up. And my skin could use the vitamin D, so don't mind the target top too much.
We could, we had that on our cars that you can own instead of a 911. Like you could sell your 911 tomorrow and buy an NSX.
And you could, and I would recommend it. I replaced a 993 with it, which was a really nice car, but what I would kind of describe as maybe a dad car. You squeeze the kids in the back seat. It was just never thrilling. The best
Honda's
part
a safe choice too, right? Like you think Honda is a safe choice, is a brand.
Yeah, but it's not an Accord, right?
Man, I've had so much fun in early Accords with manual transmissions. I really think whoever is working at Honda just clearly enjoys driving. And I feel like all their cars really embody that. So the inputs are always great. I feel like their engines are always eager to rev. Even at the, what people would call the lower end kind of Civic EXs or Honda Accords, I still think they're really enjoyable to drive.
I enjoy the Integra quite a bit. GSR, I think was what I would probably get. I think that's still is that somewhat attainable? Obviously a Type R is no, but I could get a GSR.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's funny to say attainable because you have to find a good one. And it seems like all the GSRs are completely clapped out by now, but we've had a couple for sure. A couple people in the office have had Integra is one. Robert here on the curation team is a Type R right now that I drool over. It's fun to park side by side with him in the NSX.
I valeted one of those once. It was epic. Yeah, that was like, I remember, probably 20.
This is a story of why you don't want to valet your car, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yes, do not valet if you have a car like that. I just remember I didn't know what the car was. I was 20. So this had to have been, oh my God. So I'm 42 right now. So this is like 2003, 2004, kind of this period of time. And I get in this Integra. I'm like, oh, it's a Honda Acura thing. I didn't even really know what it was. I get in, I look at the tachometer, and I go, are you serious? This tachometer goes to whatever it goes to? I'm like, sure it does. First thing I did, I got around the corner and found out immediately. And sure enough, it
classic did. Valet. Yeah, oh, gotta hit the red line.
gotta hit the red line. I don't care if that thing just been sitting for the last 6 or 7 hours. I'm gonna do it.
Well, controversially, I actually still valet my cars because I had that gig in a past life, and I always just felt it was so condescending when guys with nice cars would insist on parking themselves. So another benefit of owning a Honda, when the valet hits $8,000 in first gear in the parking lot, it's still going to start when you need to drive out of there.
True. So,
I valeted my car as well. And it's fun when the one, because there's only one guy on the team that knows how to drive stick, usually. Mm-hmm. So I pull up in the 911 and the one guy that knows how to drive stick always gets to drive the cool cars. And it's always a good time giving them that experience. Like, as long as nothing happens to the car, I don't really care. Right? Like, I don't really care.
You're better off not knowing.
Should I make another Ferris Bueller's Day Off reference? Because we're hitting on him today, I guess.
Yeah, we there's always
I just
that.
Block out the odometer every time I drop it off.
Exactly. Exactly.
So 993 to NSX, that's a pretty significant difference in car. And there's no looking back. You're cool with it.
I kind of think with 911s, the older the better for the most part. So that was some of my gripe with the 993. It just felt heavy, and the car I had an S, has 285s in the rear. I mean, that's just way too much tire for that car. Then to replace that, I got a 72 Albert Blue, same color as yours. I drove that around for a little while, but no longer with me.
Did you sell it on Bring a Trailer with the rest of the 911s?
amazingly, that's like, I think I'm great at buying, great at holding, terrible at selling. And I think that's pretty much the only car I've owned that I didn't sell on the site. Some guy basically pried it out of my hands because he was on the hunt for an Albert Blue car for so long. The plan for that was to run rallies like yours. I only did a couple, and then it just started to elevate my stress level. As you know, parts on that car just get so expensive so quick, and I was pretty buried in it towards the end.
Yeah, it's amazing seeing the parts prices going up with the cost of the cars, and the labor goes up with the cost of the cars, and the cost of ownership just becomes increasingly difficult. Like, I was out, we did a little film that we did to announce our scholarship, and I'm doing burnouts in this parking lot, just like ripping around next to this retirement home in the 911, just this drone footage car.
Which ended exactly how you think it did, by the way.
They called the cops for sure.
Yes.
But while I'm doing this, I'm just thinking, like, this motor costs $40,000. Is this a good idea? What am I doing? I never used to think stuff like that. And it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it's hard to justify your student loan debt in the back end of your car and want to rev that to $8,000. So I get it.
So Bring a Trailer, man. You're the director of auction operations, which I'm assuming that means that you make them not broken, and customer experience, which means everybody has a good time. And I think for the most part, everybody has a really good time on Bring a Trailer. And I think that's probably one of the keys to your success is it's a lot of, I've sold one car there. It was a 1983 Ford Escort in baby blue, automatic transmission with like 38,000 original miles on it.
And AM only radio.
AM only radio, no AC, crank windows. I made him drive it around for a while. He did not like that at all. But it was fun selling the car, like chatting in the comments, watching the auction, and like, oh, it's ending and the bids come in, and you're just it was really, really fun.
Cool. I'm glad to hear you say all that. I think fun is not always the adjective that everybody uses, unfortunately. I think stress comes to some people's mind, and maybe that's just because I'm a naturally high stress operator. But I actually looked at your Escort that you sold, and one correction for you, your car was an 85, not 83.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't remember. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thanks
how long you probably on that one for. But yeah, I love hearing that. And that's obviously what we strive here for, everyone's experience, which is why we pour so many human hours into the process from beginning to end.
Well, I think it's amazing too, the community that has kind of built up around it, right? Like, you don't think of an auction site as being something that people interact with each other. And yet the whole comment section of Bring a Trailer has become a community in itself.
For better, for worse. And, like, some of the comments, like, you can have auctions get completely derailed by someone's one comment. And that scares me a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got nothing to be afraid of. I the ones that get derailed, it's honestly like anything in life. Like, how do you face challenges? And if you stoop to the level of people that are being obnoxious, everyone from the outside looking in sees that. And that's when things start to go south. So we have a team here that helps with that. Your auction specialist is your guy. He can give you tips and tricks, but you can't help people that can't help themselves. So some people do themselves no favors in the face of obnoxious questions. But
that's true.
Even just looking at your escort, Chris, I mean, you clearly have nothing to worry about. You're a veteran at this point.
With one car, I'm a veteran. Yes, that's awesome. Yeah, we'll take. OK, so let's go through the Bring a Trailer process a little bit. And maybe we can help some people that are and us with this. We have a 1983 Mercedes 300D, which on its face is not a rare car. They made God unknown billions of these because of the gas crisis. They made so many of them that whenever I drive across the country, they're everywhere. They're in people's yards. They're still driving them. Whatever the case may be, they're not rare. They're all high mileage. And you look at the prices and they're kind of all over the place. You know,
All of those too just speak to the quality of that car. That they made so many high mileage. You see so many scattered throughout the entire country. I know I've done the drive too, and it's crazy how many you just see in people's yards. So
Jake hates them. Jake does not like these cars.
There's nothing exciting about them at all.
Yeah, it's hard to get out of bed, I guess, for the qualities. It's a painfully practical car, but you can still appreciate just how well engineered it is, how solid it is. Everything in my life's a sports car. I'm frustrated with anything that's not a sports car, but honestly, not everything needs to be a sports car, right? You've driven it back and forth across the country. You've scouted roads on it.
And it was flawless. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why people like these is that testament to engineering. And they're a pretty good looking car too. I think the design of the car, it's a pretty car, especially in this rare brown, this whatever melted candy bar in your pocket brown or whatever it is.
So it's exactly brown. What it is.
I'm thinking about selling this car on Bring a Trailer as a guy. Like, what do I need to know? Like, what is this process going to be like for me?
Cool. I don't need to give you the hard sell, but we'd love to have it. I'll give the team a heads up to look out for it. Awesome question. I mean, a few different things. We touched on comments, probably circle back to that. But I would probably say from my end and my experience here, you know, I've watched over 100,000 auctions at this point, vetted many more. Presentation and how you behave in the comments are probably the two most important factors. And they're also the two factors that everybody selling their car can influence themselves. So you can dictate your future by the amount of time you're going to invest in presenting the car and how well, polite, and honest you're going to be in the comments section as well.
Yeah, it's I feel like 10 years ago or so, maybe 5 years, whenever you could start selling cars on Facebook Marketplace, for example, I felt like I could make a living by buying a car on there and vacuuming it out and then selling it again. Or just like taking better photos or whatever the case may be. Presentation is everything.
Oh, yeah. Really. I mean, with food, with products, with cars, it all comes down to presentation and sort of inspiring people. So hopefully you get some sweet dirt road photos of the Benz scouting routes to include in your gallery.
Yeah, so people...
Yeah, that's going to drive away all the people, though, that are like, well, how many rock chips are there?
I wasn't driving with anybody, so none, because I wasn't tailgating anybody in the gravel. What are some of the mistakes that people make when they go through the process of getting a car ready for Bring a Trailer? Because if you buy a car and you just throw it on there, you run into issues. And you can tell me if I'm wrong here. I'm sorry. I'm asking questions and answering them and then asking them again. I apologize for that. My theory, especially for this car, when I got the car, it had a cone filter bolted to the turbo. Like all the whole airbox was gone, had a big stereo in it, subwoofer, multiple components, tweeters, amps. It had like an aftermarket stereo with like a cigarette lighter adapter hanging out the side. Any car, and this goes for not even bring a trailer. Any car that I get that when I'm ready to sell it, I do almost everything I can to depersonalize the car. I wanted to make it seem like it wasn't owned by a particular type of person. Is that fair to say that that's worth the effort? Because I'm spending a ton of time and money working on that.
I mean, I love the way you you condense that. Depersonalization, I think, is great. But the flip side of that is also humanization, especially like an old car. To Jake's point, man, your Benz does nothing for him. But maybe the story behind it would actually sort of spark something inside of him and motivate him to bid on something that he's a little less stoked about. But again, those are fringe buyers. That's not necessarily who you're marketing the car to. So,
right.
Man, my heart lit up when you said swapping that aftermarket Alpine out for a more original stereo, particularly with older Mercedes R107s. The first thing I look to when I'm looking at them is, man, is the original stereo there or is it some lame digital Panasonic? Because it literally
is a Panasonic in this thing with digital with dolphins. It's got dolphins and Formula One cars driving on the screen.
Oh, my God. 2001. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I've seen hundreds of those in my day, and Panasonic's now a trigger word for me. But I think that's super smart. Wheels in particular, the guys that aren't motivated enough to swap their stock wheels back on, even though they have them laying in the garage.
What are your thoughts on like OEM plus wheels? Like I have Rono Pentas on this thing, which are period correct for the car. You know what I mean? Like they belong there, or should I put the bunts back on and keep these wheels for myself?
Oh yeah, plus you guys warned me that you're able to swear on this podcast.
Oh no, is that bad?
Oh yeah, plus it's such a subjective term. It's amazing the amount of people that cross my desk that would describe something as OEM plus that I would say is politely a minus.
I see.
OEM minus.
On some cars, certainly period wheels, Randy's R5, for instance, with the Gotti wheels, they look fantastic. BBSs, I mean, in an ocean full of G-body 911s sitting on Fuchs, it's kind of cool to see something a little bit different in a period. Maybe get your HREs off of your 348 Ferrari and swap the original five spokes on. That's probably my opinion there, but it's a totally subjective call for sure.
What are your thoughts on doing something with reserve or no reserve?
Mm.
Like, do I want to put a reserve on the car? Do I not want to put a reserve on the car?
Well, I'll let you answer, but I have a follow-up question.
Cool, Jake. I'm braced for it. But I mean, everyone's financial situation is like a little relative to them. Obviously, it's a intimidating thought to sell something at no reserve when you have maybe most of your net worth tied up into your car. So I get why people are hesitant, but honestly, it is a better strategy. No reserve listings see more engagement. We've listed over 110,000 cars. We've listed nearly 30,000 of them at no reserve, and seeing something sell way out of line of market really isn't something that happens. So in terms of downside risk, if you have a car and you've mentally moved on and you want to really try and optimize the result, I mean, I think no reserve is the best possible strategy there. So honestly, to you, Chris, like if your Benz bids to a fair figure, do you really want to stare it down with a reserve that's maybe a little above it, pass on it, go back?
I want it to go away.
Yeah, like, exactly. You moved on.
Yeah, I want to move on, even if it's owned by Overcrest now. So maybe I can't speak to what the other boys think, but I
would like some of our investment back regardless. So.
My follow-up question,
Zach. Yeah, it's, the reserve I think of almost as like buying insurance for the sale, right? Because you're putting kind of a detriment, or I guess this is my question. Is it a detriment to people bidding? I mean, it certainly seems like it, but do you guys have any stats as far as like, well, people that have a reserve have X percent less engagement, or you know what I mean? Like, is there any hard and fast rule about why it's a benefit not to have?
That's a smart question, Jake. And I think there's so many other variables that it's it wouldn't be clear from the data on just view count. You know, it's not only your make model, it's condition, it's mileage, it's transmission, it's spec. So it's hard to say. If you listed with a reserve, you would have a worse result. I don't think that's necessarily the case. And for some people, kind of bearing the risk of a pretty pricey car and it just not being quite its day, I understand. So yeah, in terms of downside protection, especially on modern cars, you can always go to CarMax, figure out what a low wholesale number is, and then go, okay, on my 2013 Boxster, I know I'm getting 40 grand and leaving with a check if I drop it off over here at CarMax. So maybe I should just have that as a reserve for the peace of mind it offers me.
I think it seems like it's better for live in-person auctions, because it's when you're on Bring a Chair of the Year there for like, what is it, a week? Is it that is the 7 days? Is that the common?
Yeah, 7 days.
Okay. So you have 7 days, 7 days for people to think about it, right? You got 7 days for people to engage, bid, think about it. When you're at one of these auction houses, you've got 10 minutes to think about it, 15 minutes to think about it. And it's much more, I think it's much more emotional. I don't know that I would want to sell a car live. I guess it's just different. I mean, there's probably benefits to that as well, depending on what the car is in terms of marketing, everything like that. But I feel like a reserve is really probably better in that environment than it is yours.
I think you'd feel better. I mean, yeah, you get the Coors Light flowing in the room and Jackson ladies telling you to throw up your paddle. That probably helps for some cars, but you're totally right with just the size of our audience, the amount of time and eyeballs that you get over 7 days. I mean, do you recall how many views your Escort had, Chris?
No.
17, are you looking at it?
17,000?
17,000?
17,000 views on your automatic 85 Escort sedan.
Well, I can guarantee you that it wasn't 17,001 because Jake hated that car. So do you know the story of that thing? What we did with it?
Do tell.
Okay, so I got in a package deal. So I bought a 73 Ford Pinto Squire wagon with like 40,000 original miles. And the guy also said, I have this Escort. Would you also like to buy that? I'll give it to you for four. And I go, okay, yeah, sure. So I ended up, me and Jake flew out and we picked up. I didn't tell him what car he was getting.
Here's the problem. I didn't even know where I was going.
He didn't.
Okay?
He had no idea.
I go to the ticket counter at the airport and they're like, I'm like, I have a ticket for me. And she's like, where are you going? And I was like, this is going to sound like I'm a terrorist. I have no idea where I'm going. Like, this is red flags all over the place. Yeah. So Chris told me nothing.
Appleton, Wisconsin is where we end up going. But yeah, I put him in this Escort and he was so disappointed. We have a YouTube video of it. It's
there's
best,
a whole film.
Best of the worst. The Ford Pinto with
the
Escort.
A YouTube video of Jake going to the airport. Sounds more interesting than
we
did.
No, we didn't have the film crew there. But
oh, yeah, we didn't have that. But we do have the full. We took both cars to the track to see which one was faster. The Pinto.
Teeny circle track in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I see. Tech inspection rules, I imagine.
It was big time.
We pulled in. The guy's like,
"So fun.
Go ahead." And then he walked away. It was so awesome. Oh, and ends up the Pinto was faster in the end.
It was, yeah. Believe it or not, even with the high output on that Escort.
Oh man, yeah, 17,000 views. That is a lot. That is a lot of views. What does a 911 get? If an Escort gets 17,000,
yeah, it depends on the year. Obviously, a 996 is going to be less than your Albert Blue car, but average across the sites, probably around 10,000 views. And then I think a lot of the G bodies, especially, a G50 coupe with good photos is probably 20,000 plus. And
dang, that Escort pulled some tail, didn't it?
Oh yeah.
Apparently. Yeah. Jeez. Right. So Zach, I'm curious, you've been with Bring a Trailer for what? Not since the beginning, but quite some time, right?
I'm just after the inception. So I've been of our auctions. So yeah, Randy on the side and 07, I arrived. It's been about 8 years now for me, so I think I'm rounding out my PhD here in Bring a Trailer.
So everyone kind of, at least a lot of our listeners, know Bring a Trailer as it is today, right? Where did it start? Like, what is the history of Bring a Trailer, if you would?
Oh, cool. I mean, we can go deep. I know Randy's talked about it at length. I think he brushed up on this with you, Chris, when you guys had your podcast the other week. So yeah, Randy started it originally as as a blog, mostly here's an interesting car for sale. A lot of his snark, I think, captivated a pretty vibrant audience early on. You guys have hung out with Randy personally. He's a man of strong opinions and articulates them well. So
I don't know anyone like that at all.
Yeah. So that was sort of Randy's hobby for a little while. And then after 2 or 3 years, he was able to flip it into a full blown business, leave BMW and start it. So he was a one man shop for a number of years, brought on some friends from school and started originally early days. This is again, pre me, there was BAT exclusives, people trying to sell their car via classifieds. Randy very astutely honed in on, man, this sucks. You list asking price and everybody's just trying to grind you down. Like, you guys ever see a car on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace and want to just hand the guy his asking price? It's pretty far and few between. It's usually groveling over this and that. Also, so many people would email at once when something was listed at a pretty reasonable number. It's auctions were just sort of a natural transition. So yeah, they brought Howard on in 2014, and then July 14, coming up on our anniversary here, Randy sold three of his personal cars, the Boss E30 M3 and the Bluett Stepnose, and we're off to the races. So yeah, then I came on in 2015, early lot number, helped Randy and Howard, and here we are.
Have you how have things changed in the just from the auction perspective? What has been some of the changes that have happened overall? It could be community, it could be the way that you guys do things over the course of the 8 years that you've been there.
Yeah, awesome question. I mean, things have evolved hugely on the staff side and personnel side. We were very lean and mean early days, just kind of the three of us, and then there were four sitting with our MacBooks against the wall. And now we're a full-blown 160-plus company, really buttoned up, tight ship. So that sort of internal staff thing is pretty incredible. The growth of the community is also, I mean, no other way to say this other than insane. We had our millionth user sign up a few weeks ago. So pretty amazing just to see the growth there. Meaningful shift for me, I think, is the way I'm able to interact with customers now compared to the early days. I think we had a little new kids on the block mentality, a little scrappier, trying to not necessarily sell people, but convince why Bring a Trailer is the right marketplace for their cars in the early days. We didn't have this rich hundred plus thousand car data to pull from to say, hey, seems a little pricey for your 996 based on these six we've sold. It was a lot of telling this guy with this TR3, you know, 15 is kind of where this one needs to be, even though I don't have any links to send you. So yeah, the data collection and customer interaction is certainly a lot different today than it was 8 years ago.
Do you think one thing that I've noticed that's happened over the last however many years is that in the beginning, it was just dudes selling their cars a Bring a Trailer. Now it's dudes giving cars to a company that will sell your car on Bring a Trailer for you. So there, you guys have created this whole cottage industry of prep your car for Bring a Trailer so you can get the top dollar for that car. Like, I know a guy who just sent his car to one of these places and they did all kinds of shit, which you have to pay for, obviously, but repainted the front bumper, they dry ice the underside of the car, the thing looks like brand fucking new, and then it goes up for sale, and then they take, I don't know, what is it, 8 or 10%, 11% of the final auction price. You guys have created an entire economy surrounding selling cars on your website. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? When should I sell my car that like that? Or when should I not sell my car like that? When should I do it myself? What do you think of this whole
thing? Oh, I mean, I think it's amazing. It's what luxury to drop your car off somewhere and say, just send me the check and not have to do anything, right? So there are a lot of guys out there that are happy to eat a healthy feed just to never think about it again and have that land in their bank account. And then there's a lot of guys like you that are literally getting in there, pulling off their headlights, pulling out the stereo, putting in some elbow grease themselves to prep it and get it for sale. So yeah, a little relative to people's personal circumstances and how busy they are in their personal life. But from the business perspective, I think it's amazing. We have all these volume sellers who are awesome and pleasant people to hang with, which I'm like, see them at events, stoked to go to dinner with them, would be stoked to do your event with them. Car enthusiasts themselves have just a huge wealth of knowledge, not only in terms of specific models, but also of selling on VAT to help all these people that maybe sell a car every 5 years.
Right.
So I think it's awesome. I'm all for it.
What's the, how many cars do you guys turn down? I mean, you guys must have, it's, here's my like Chevy. We have like guys that apply to the rally with like a brand new Chevy Silverado. And I'm like, no, like that's an obvious no. But how do you guys deal with turning stuff down when people get upset?
Thank you for telling them that for me. It saves me a little bit of work.
What's the criteria for a car that gets on Bring a Trailer?
Yeah, good question. To your original question, we accept about 40% of the total cars that get submitted to us. And that doesn't mean 60% are outright form rejected. A lot of those are fall apart due to price. Guy wants way too much money for his 85 Escort. We tell him, hey, probably no reserve only one. He says, man, this is the nicest one left. Yep. I need an $11,000 reserve. That's one that's probably going to be on ice for a little while.
Because it's not good for you guys if it doesn't sell, right? If it's a no sale, that's not great.
Yeah, I mean, we're happy to help people buy and sell their cars. And obviously, we want to help enthusiasts and be a pleasant place for people to hang out in the community and support and foster that. But for some stuff, when the data is just really clear, hey, that's pretty high for a reserve. Those are ones we're less able to help with. So that's one. Some guys obviously say, great, going to get you a wealth of photos, never hear from them again. They disappear. So some things get lost in process there. And it's probably around 10 to 20% on any given week of cars that get a form. Hey, this just isn't right for us.
What about the cool factor of the car? Because it seems like most of the cars are cool. Like, who's deciding? Who's the arbiter of cool?
Do you have, like, blush over here, Chris?
Yes. Are you the arbiter of cool?
So Howard Swig, our head of auctions, and I, we co-manage our curation process. And then, I oversee our curation team here. So we have a small, tight-knit team of curators, which I like to think have their finger on the pulse of what's cool and what's not in a lot of different ways, and also know values in cars through and through.
So how do you feel about essentially being someone that has, not only do you have a finger on the pulse, but you've got like the paddles, like the, like if you guys want to start like affecting the market in a certain way and accepting more of a certain car, then not that saying you guys do this, but that you do have the power to have control over the market in some way if you're deciding what's cool, right?
I think so. I mean, we can't motivate people to the market doesn't always align with people's expectations. So pull up the C8 model page right now and watch these tears of blood stream down my face as every next 23 Z06 keeps missing reserve. Bronco Raptors for a while were selling strong and suddenly weren't. And people's expectations didn't really align with that. So we can list a ton. We can list everything, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the market's going to support it. So in terms of influence, I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'm not quite sure where the line is there for us.
Yeah, it's interesting that you do. I mean, you have it whether you want it or not. And it's not that it would be like an intentional drawing with a Sharpie on a white piece of paper, but it is definitely this gray area where whatever you guys do does have an influence. And I think there's great responsibility there because this is our passion. This is what we love.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. We don't take that lightly.
You mentioned, Zach, that, you know, you could list everything that came your way, but obviously you don't. And my questioner that brought up a good point, how many cars are there for sale on the auction at any given time?
Yeah, we're running. We just hit our peak, which was a little over 800 across a 7-day cycle. So this is a little bit of a dip in the year because 4th of July, staff holidays, people on vacay. So we're averaging about 700 new auctions each and every week. I think come the end of July here, we'll be back up over 800 and maybe crest into 900 a week here in the fall.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, when I was here, we're running 5 a week. I remember a discussion we had with Randy. It was like an all staff meeting at the time that could fit in a single room about going over 100 a week. And we're all wondering, oh man, is the market going to support 100 listings on Bring a Trailer? So pretty hilarious to think back on that based on our size.
Well,
now,
not only do you guys support it, but there's, you know, your guys' success spawned other websites and other, I mean, there's people that are trying to come up with companies that fail. There's people that are doing it that, or they're actually doing okay. You know, then there's Mark specific auction places for Mercedes, Porsche, stuff like that. The market seems so strong. It's like, it's almost like, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how there can be so many cars for sale all the time. How is this possible? How is it sustainable? And at what point do you guys go, wow, we're doing 1,000 cars a week. What else can we do? Because that's, at some point, it's got to be like, that's it, right? What else can you guys do to like occupy your time?
Man, I don't know. My days feel pretty full. Have been a while here. I kind of look forward to that future where I'm sitting around wondering what else I could do. But it's funny that you say that because, you know, every once in a while, I'm an insecure person. I'll get psyched out. I'll go, man, are we going to list every single car that's ever been built? When do we list that last G-body? But
yeah,
if you go on Auto Trader or any of these just classified listing sites, there's usually well over 100,000 cars for sale at any given time. I mean, it's staggering just the numbers of things that are for sale. So to hear, yeah, we're doing 700-800 a week. In terms of the market as a whole, and that's just in the US. I mean, you can think about globally, it's crazy how many cars are available at any given time. And to your point, how many buyers there are for a 964 RS out there.
Yeah, it's one thing that's also that you guys affect and influence is you guys affect the prices off the website too. So when I go on Facebook Marketplace and there's a guy with a 540i six speed and in the link or in his description is a link to a sold auction of a BMW M5. And he uses that as a barometer for his clapped out. It's got a donut on the rear wheel. It's rusty. the Vanos is leaking. All these different things that are going on in this car. But he's using your website to be like, well, this M5 sold for 25 grand. So I want at least six.
So obviously, yes, obviously. That's what they're worth.
It is the rise of the tide.
Did my Venmo go through to queue me up for this question? You guys are just hitting right at home.
Oh no! And Zach, we've talked about this before at length, and we've coined the term the bring a trailer effect, right?
Yeah, because the description of the 540 with a guy comping with an Ethernet 95 is like the bane of our existence in the curation department.
Okay.
So yeah, we feel your pain certainly day in day out.
Yeah, it's tough because I like buying deals. I can honestly say I will probably never buy a car on Bring a Trailer. There's part of me that just like, I like the deal. I like finding something that nobody else has found, like in a yard and going there and getting it and saving it and fixing it up and then selling it. That's the journey that I like. There's nothing wrong with
it. There are just as many, keep in mind, if not more people who don't have time to go around the country and look. And well, what I'm going to say is that's what's so cool about Bring a Trailer. And I think that's what's been unique is the variety and kind of unique things that are brought to light, right? It's almost like you guys do actually curate what goes up on the site and you're able to basically show or give light to some of these very odd, obscure cars.
Yeah. And telling the story is a huge part of that. And can make a car that's relatively uninteresting become interesting. You can do that through presentation or, your ownership with it, taking it on rallies, stating that in the listing. But it is funny that you say you're deal hunting because even here in the office, I mean, I'm watching everything close day in, day out.
There are a few. Circle,
and there's there something that sneak by that you're like, oh, dang, I wish I was in on that.
There was a W124 wagon, a diesel with a salvage title. That sold for like $2,800, like, and it was just like it needed some work, but it was a diesel and it was a wagon and it was a manual, and I'm like, damn, I missed that one.
Steph knows the other week that me and Robert in the office were kicking ourselves watching it sell. I think for 26 grand, the seller said, you know what, I'll just cut it loose there. So yeah, had a few needs, but awesome buy and cool car.
Yeah, I just
reminds me, I almost the same thing with a yellow B6 S4, no, B5 S4 Avant that went way below what I thought it was going to be on Bring a Trailer. And I was thinking, yeah, I should maybe throw a bid in there. And I didn't. And it didn't go any higher than when I was like,
that's why it's worth it.
Nobody wants yellow cars. Yeah, I bet yellow cars have the worst sale rating on Bring a Trailer.
It's 100% the
opposite.
You think
yellow is worse than purple? You think all the Prowlers are popping up?
Oh, that's a prowler in the first place, right? Do people want those things? yellow is the worst. Speed yellow. No.
Interesting. Oh, I think yellow has its place on a few cars. Many
school buses and taxis.
Yeah, there's a yellow GT3 downstairs for me right now. It's probably not my first choice, but it's down there.
I'd take that.
I only bring this up because Jake and his wife love yellow cars. So I'm just honestly
said many, I see. A yellow car.
Yeah, it's just kind of a
996 turbo RS4. Yeah.
Dude, Zach, what else, man? You think that's it? Did we cover all our bases?
No.
What do you think?
Here's the thing. I have another question. We talked about, you know, how you guys are able to curate these really unique items. Because now it's not just cars, keep in mind, too. You also have, like, parts and other just strange things.
Yeah,
you guys
have sold
tractors, right?
Boats.
Yeah, here's my question.
All the hoods that just went for charity?
Yeah, that's right.
Airplanes.
So what is the most unique item that you, like, it came across your desk and you were just like, what? What is this? Like, does anything stand out, like a handful?
Usually if I'm saying what is this, it's not an excited what is this, it's like what is this? A lot of sculptures, a lot of wooden art sitting across my desk occasionally. Not a lot of that making it to the site, but some of the stuff is cool, like the wire sculptures that we're seeing. Some are like a 1-to-1 scale of an F40. Would I put it in my home? Probably not, but I don't quite have the square footage for it anyway.
Yeah, I'd have to sleep on it. I'd have to make it like a Ferrari bed from when we were little kids.
But for me personally, I mean, the things that really ignite me are like cars with interesting ownership history. Like we had Mario Andretti's C5 Corvette the other week. It's like, that's awesome. You can have an ex Andretti C5 Corvette for $30,000. That seems like such cool value.
Right. So what's the next big thing?
Next big thing, I mean, I don't think you'll be surprised to see, I can tease this, that's fine, an app launch in the relatively near future. I don't think you'll be surprised to see more international listings on BAT. I mean, there's just so many sick cars in Europe. And also just with the 25-year import rule ever inching up, more cool cars that can be legally imported here. So
will you guys be assisting with the import process? Cause that's the hardest part.
I would love to. Yeah. We have our shipping partner now and would love to select a meaningful international shipping partner. Cause for me personally, like I'm trying to be one of the first guys that gets an R34 in here. And I personally would love the import export assistance there.
Yeah. It's a pain in the ass. I've looked into shipping cars. I wanted to get like a 2-door G-Wagon, one of the older ones that has like the seats bolted to the floor, like super utilitarian.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'd love to do that, but I'm just like, I don't know how to import this without dealing with some dude from New Jersey that's trying to rip me off on the, like on the import fees and stuff like that. to have like, if that is something I would buy from Bring
a
Trailer.
Not a lot of chief diversity officers in the import export world. I hear you.
Yeah, no, there absolutely is not.
Antiquated, antiquated blue collar industry for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, dude, thank you for hanging out with us. I really appreciate you spending the time. Are you coming on the rally?
I would like to. I don't have a car that can handle the dirt. Everything I have.
You don't have to drive.
It doesn't
dirt.
Have to be dirt.
I know, this is a
there
common,
is like, asphalt only routes.
Yes.
Is it? But is that like lame?
This is no. Yes. This is all Chris's fault. This is all Chris's fault. This is totally a misnomer because everyone takes photos and video of like the gravel section.
That's because
but there is a
like
large
heroes.
Contingent of people that only take the asphalt route, and it's just as amazing, the route.
I'm sure it's really great. And this is, again, my own insecurities, but I think there's something inherently lame in showing up in one of the fastest cars on the event and then not doing the dirt stages.
You
so,
can't because
my man.
Your car is too fast and
it's
you can't get traction on the gravel, right? Nope. You gotta. I'm harping
about,
on this because it's a big misnomer that people are like, well, I don't want to go on gravel.
We do have tarmac only
gravel only.
Well, the last thing I want to do is, perpetuate misinformation. But for me personally,
go for it.
There's something about driving sports cars on gravel. It's even if they don't belong there. The driving experience and the physics of it's there's nothing like it. It's fun.
Oh, and everybody's freedom. I mean, it's an amazing feeling.
Yeah. Sideways at 30 miles an hour instead of sideways at 50, where as soon as I let off the gas, the rear tires of my 911 are going to let go and I'm just dead. you know,
but not the rear tires of your 300D because you've driven that so gently across the course of your ownership.
Yeah, yeah. There is not a reel on our page of me doing a S curve in the mountains on gravel sideways in that car. That doesn't exist.
Nice. Well, that vid will honestly look awesome in the listing. So I hope you include it.
Yeah. Well, we should. I have like so much like drone footage and like amazing footage and photos of this car. I'm sure we'll be able to figure out some good stuff. And then of course I'll take pictures of it in like a empty parking lot too for all the guys that want like everything shot at f11 500 megapixels so that they can zoom in and see like every little
Ooh, f11, come on man, blow it out, drop that thing to 1.4 and give me that nice.
Can't do that. It's not in focus. Then everybody wants everything in like hyper focus. Which I understand. They want to see it. They want to see it.
I'm everything. Totally everything that's wrong with the photography world and just shoot wide open. So
yeah. Dude, I hope you find a way to come on the rally. Maybe you can be co-driving with somebody, or maybe a car will pop up. That's a super sweet deal that you can pick up and bring it along.
Cool. Appreciate it. Well, if not this year, then yeah, definitely next year.
Yeah. Right on.
Absolutely. Some ground clearance.
Thanks for hanging out with us, man. We appreciate it. Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
So Jake, are we going to make a bet? Like who's closest on this Benz for Ben? Final? Yeah. Do you want to make a bet or anything? Like,
I don't know. What would the bet be?
How about just like
what's at stake?
If you lose, you have to come up to my house and hang out.
Okay. And then if you lose, you have to come down here, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And so I won't come up there until that's done. Is what you're saying.
Well, you're not going to anyway. So that's
sad. It.
Many thanks to Zach for hanging out with us and talking with us about the car.
Absolutely.
I think the bring a trailer phenomenon is amazing. It's frustrated me at times. You know, I think really, really cool at times. I mean, we had a clip for the longest time. I wish I had it, which is get out of my boat, right? Where it's like all these people are piling into the classic car boat, like inflating the prices, and it's bring a trailer's fault. And, you know, we even talked to Randy about that. How do you feel about doing this to everybody? And it's more like they work very hard. Don't get me wrong, but they are a product of what people want. They want to buy these cars and it's like an ice cream stand. If people want the ice cream and you build the ice cream stand there, they're going to buy the fucking ice cream. And
that's
they're going to buy a lot of it, especially if you invented the ice cream.
Well, and if there's maybe some rare ice cream or popular ice cream, that's going to get more expensive there.
Yeah, yeah. I heard the mint chocolate chip is overpriced, though. Don't buy the mint chocolate chip.
It's
overpriced.
Really?
It's going to be cheaper next week.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. You know, it's not a bubble. A lot of people are saying the mint chocolate is a bubble. I think it's still going up. Although, you know, the freeze-dried as opposed to the regular. Yes.
The dots, you know, the Dippin' Dots.
Correct. Yeah, that's better. Yeah, that's better. You got to differentiate.
Well, I thought, speaking of bubbles, I really thought that the 911 is the 911 stuff leveled out a little bit.
I honestly haven't been paying attention too much.
I feel like a little bit.
Even if the pricing hasn't come down quite as much, the veracity of it, right? People aren't as, I don't know. I feel like the hype has died a hair.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. Maybe it's moved on to something else. I'm not sure. Well, I guess I don't know what that is or what that'd be.
All right.
Well, before we get into a couple other things, what have you got for us?
Yeah, let's take a minute to talk about our sponsor, Auto Anon, Automotive Anonymous. Go to autoanon.com. They are an awesome supplier of unique enamel pins as well as vintage automotive posters. That is their core. It's all original. Vintage automotive posters.
Yep.
Head over to their site right now. I'm on there right now. I really like, so he's a big Porsche fan, of course, the owner, but there's a whole bunch of stuff from across the gamut. I'm looking at, do you remember, it's funny because so many of these posters are from like my childhood era.
Yeah.
And you think back. So like, do you remember when the Boxster just came out? And so they had it next to the 550 Spider, and it's an awesome,
I don't remember any
epic
of that stuff.
Poster.
I was just like,
why?
I was just working on, I wasn't an enthusiast back then, dude. I was just in the garage working on my grandpa's car. Like I wasn't an enthusiast until I got my Rabbit later on. Like there was no
That's different. There was like most people grow up with the posters and everything else.
Never had a single car poster in my life. You know, and it's interesting. I used to be really self-conscious about that.
Okay.
I mean, there was a couple things where I would say like, yeah, I used to have a 930 poster in my bedroom. Sure, of course I did. Because
you wanted to be part of it, like you weren't the guy.
I felt like this when I was
lying to be cool. Well, yeah, you know what you should do, Chris? AutoHannon.com. You can get that original 930 poster from back in the day.
I've got posters,
and then you don't have to lie. You don't have to lie. Yeah,
dude,
I felt like I didn't belong.
I felt like I didn't belong.
You don't. I mean, you still don't. Let's be honest. Oh, but
thanks.
You've just kind of learned to own that, right?
Yeah.
The whole get out of my boat thing that you were talking about. You're very proud of that. You take pride in being the only one in your boat. But regardless, it's a curated collection of motorsport goods. It's an awesome store. Head over there right now, AutoAnon.com, or on Instagram, Automotive Anonymous. You can also use the code Overcrest. That'll get you free shipping on all the posters. I'm looking across the gamut. The motorsport stuff is so cool. You have the manufacturer original posters or advertisements in there too, which I'm like, ooh, I see a couple of my vintage 951, which I really hate, but it might be cool to have a matching poster from back in the day.
All right. Yeah, it's weird. The car world is very judgy. And I'm very judgy.
It's because of you. You are the problem.
It's entirely my fault.
100%. No.
It's weird because if you don't have opinions on something and you don't have a group. Like you get kind of based on your opinions, you get put in, you kind of gravitate to little groups. It's almost like gravity, right? In space, where you have all these different celestial bodies of human beings that like cars, for example, and certain elements kind of like start to kind of coalesce together and make different like things in space. And it's kind of like that with car people too. You kind of form these opinions and then you kind of like, it's almost like
it's your little click.
It's like little blobs of water that just start going bloop, 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 and they stick together.
That's exactly why all the air-cooled guys had been shunning, all the water-cooled guys until that's become less of a thing now. But
I think that the internet has alleviated that a little bit. And it's one of the things
that's what caused it.
Yes. Well, no.
These echo chambers.
No. It was before.
No.
Before the internet, you had your crew, and your crew, you all liked the same thing. You were a gasser, you were a ricer, you were a muscle car guy, whatever. And I think the internet has alleviated a little bit. And when we started doing the rally a long time ago, the number one thing I wanted to do is I didn't want it to be a Porsche event.
Right. Like, we wanted more variety.
And this was hard the first few years. This comes from, so there was a club here called Volksport back in the day.
Okay.
And I got kicked out of that club. And when I got kicked out of that club, I founded, I was a shit, man. Holy cow. Yeah. I was abrasive. Yeah. I was rude. I didn't like authority. Don't tell me what to do. I'll shit on your post
more so than today?
Oh, dude. Like I am Santa Claus in comparison. Uh-huh. And I don't even remember why, but I want to be a photographer, a car photographer. And I was like 20, and like working at Best Buy. Like, I want to be a car photographer. And these dudes went, you suck. You'll never do it. And then they banned me from their website. And I went, oh, yeah? And I started EuroWorks, started doing rallies and car shows. That website no longer exists. It shut down because EuroWorks ended up dominating it. And the reason was the variety became huge. Like, I didn't want to just look at Volkswagens anymore. I wanted to see other things. And Overcrest was the same way. I'm like, when we founded Overcrest, I'm like, I was so in the Porsche world at that point, kind of like when I was in the Volkswagen world back then. It's like, I don't want this to end up. And, granted, this is core foundation. It is Porsche, especially with the rally and stuff. I understand that. But I also want to see other things.
Right.
I don't
want to get outside of that click.
Yeah. I don't love Rennsport. I don't love it. I like Lufka Cult because I enjoy the people a lot. I really enjoy the people.
And how it's curated is different.
It's very, very, very unique.
Yeah.
But it's one of the reasons why I don't like the PCA show. Because I don't want to go see a bunch of, I don't really care about the cars that much.
I know what you mean.
Unless it's really special and really unique and someone could tell me a story.
Right.
I'm interested.
We're uniquely jaded, though, too. Like, we do this in and out every day, the car thing, especially Porsche. And we're inundated with Instagram and everything else and the social media that's curated to us. Like, most people want to see these cars. or they want to show off their own car, right, is really what it is.
And they don't, there's nothing else going on. You know, I really feel like we could do better than a parking lot at a park for a show. And it makes me sad.
Well, I like the people that were there hanging out with a lot of friends that people. I saw. And
all right, I'm feeling like I'm being too negative right now.
I'm sorry.
No, it's meant to be positive. Like, we're bringing a bunch of different groups together. Like, the BMW guys are coming, Mercedes guys are coming. It's,
you know,
like,
what we could probably do less of?
Huh?
Are Mercedes, like old Mercedes.
There's
I'd be fine
enough.
With less of that.
There's not Let's enough old Mercedes.
Less is fine. And on that note.
Dude, this car right here, if you're watching on video, this car runs freaking mint now.
The driven to death car.
Yep.
It runs. So
do you want me to start it up for you? It's like a bonus.
Okay. Let's like say goodbye and then you go start it up. Okay. But I want to hear first real quick. So you figured out why that float was always flooding.
Yeah.
Or why the carb was. It was some little other.
It was like there was a burr that was keeping things from sealing up. Yes.
Okay. And then did you say you found like the jetting was wrong
one of the jets was like a 165 instead of a 150.
So now you love it. It's ripping.
I like it a lot. I still think it runs a little. It runs really good. I feel like it needs a little bit more fuel up top. Because the last time I drove it, I went and drove it and I adjusted a few things. And then I parked it and I haven't really driven it since. Because I wanted
Have you hooked the wideband up to it at all?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I have. Yeah, I did. That's how I did the idle. You know, as I have the wideband thing that I hooked up to there. All right. I'm going to say we're not going to do music this time. We're just gonna have the car, and I'm gonna rev the car up a little bit, and then we'll say goodbye. Actually, then I'm gonna come back and go, "What'd you think?" Okay?
No, don't do that. Just say goodbye right now. We'll see you guys next week. You say take care.
No, that's you. You say take care. I'm saying, I want you to admit that it sounds pretty good. So I got to come back and see what you think.
Oh God. Okay. All right? Fine.
Okay.
Go.
It hasn't run in a long time, so hopefully this.
So it's gonna sit here and go.
Hopefully.
And then it won't start, and we'll say on that note. Yeah, he's like making signs at the camera. Which, by the way, you can head over to youtube.com/overcrest, or also on Spotify there is video. Oh.
It's warm.
Yeah, we didn't really think this through very well.
We didn't really think
the other problem too is this microphone is terrible at picking up ambient noises. Like, it's very good at filtering out.
So
like,
but
yeah,
so there was no
it,
sound.
But it doesn't sound great. Like, it's just that's all I got.
It did start right up.
I was surprised by that. That was nice.
It does run really, really nice. Anyway,
that's awesome.
That's it. Many thanks to Bring a Trailer for coming on and supporting Overcrest and being part of what we do. They believe in us, and I'm so humbled by that. All of our partners that do. It's incredible. And as much as I've made fun of Bring a Trailer, they are all the guys there are the real deal. They really are.
Yeah, and it is really cool hearing from them and seeing how
I look forward to having you at my house when that car sells for $8,800 rather than you coming to my house. I'm saying $8,800. What are you saying?
$95,000.
Oh, you brought it.
Well,
down.
I'll just say 88.1. I just think it's going more than that.
Okay, that's fine. 88.01 for Jake.
Yep.
8,800.
I'm basically pulling the $1, Bob.
Yeah, that's fine. That means you'll just have to come over to my house if it sells for more. And if it doesn't, then I'll come hang out with you, which is something I would do anyway, because I'm a good friend.
No, you're saying it goes for $8,800 or less.
Right. So if it goes less than that, I'll come over. And I'm just saying I would do that anyway, because I'm a great friend. I like seeing you and hanging out. So.
And then, so basically, if we make more money, then I come up.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. We will see you guys next week.
Take care.